Hello and welcome to the 31st episode of the Pop Papa Napcast. I'm your host, TJ Deitch. I'm also the proprietor of poppapa.com, the site that hosts this podcast, along with my photo diaries, which I am hoping to get caught up on pretty soon. Seems like I say that every episode, but, well, I mean it every episode. I hope everybody had a good week. I had an interesting one. In the last episode, I talked about how busy I was leading up to Comic-Con, and really the week before Comic-Con, and last week was actually a little bit slower. Since I had turned so many things in advance and had other non-Comic-Con related things that were kind of on a deadline, I kind of took it a little bit easy on myself going into this weekend, which is always a lot of work and stressful and all this stuff. And partly I wanted to relax, and then also I just wanted to, you know, spend a little bit more time with Lucy because I was going to be gone for so long. And so we just hung out a little bit more, with me not having to worry about work so much. So that was pretty nice. Although I will say, I think I mentioned this last time, but we're really getting to some tough stages right now. I've mentioned the asking for things a million times in a second thing that she keeps doing, where it's not just, can I have an apple? And I say yes. It's, can I have an apple? Apple, 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 apple. And if you're trying to concentrate on writing something and you just finally figured out like the perfect line to open a story or end one or, you know, just your way in, sometimes that's the hardest part. And then you're constantly barraged with the same thing. It can be very difficult to work with. And so, honestly, I was looking forward to the time away. And I know, you know, part of me even feels bad saying that. But I read a story on the internet that my wife actually posted on Facebook, and I will put the full information on the show notes for this episode over on poppapa.com. But it was a woman writer who's a mother basically saying that all the moms need to take it easy on themselves, that they cannot be super moms all the time. And I read this thing, and obviously it's addressed at mothers and not fathers, but I felt like I could relate to it, even though it wasn't based on my gender. I mean, anybody who's a parent worth their salt wants to do their best for their kid. And for a lot of people, the construction of, in your mind, of what doing well for your kid is like being all things all the time. And we feel bad when we can't do the things that we are either quote-unquote supposed to or feel that we need to help raise our kids. I mean, some people are just not good at cooking or just don't have the time to cook homemade meals every day. Others do. And some people use a certain kind of diaper and some don't. Some do this and that and that. And there's a million little things that you can do or not do. And, you know, her point to the mothers was, let's all just take it a little bit easier on ourselves and each other, because it's not helping anybody kind of being a sanctimonious prick. Pardon my language, if that's offensive, to somebody who's doing the exact same thing you're trying to do, you know. And so I kind of thought about that. And, you know, when you are dealing with a child all the time and it's starting to get stressful, whether, you know, it's just you reacting to them or they're being, I guess you can't be stressful to somebody else because that's all how you interact with it. But if they're just being kind of generally annoying, it can be difficult. And Lucy hadn't been super bad, but by the end of the week, I was kind of like, okay, I'm actually kind of looking forward to this weekend of just being able to focus on my work and hanging out with my friends and all this stuff. Because really, I mean, I don't have that much social life. We have friends around here that we get together with every now and then. And then a lot of my close friends who I knew when I moved out here have all kind of moved to different places. Some are still in the state. Some are nearby, like in Jersey or Connecticut, and some are even closer, but it's just hard to make it all work when you've got kids and jobs and commuting and all this stuff. So it's just one of those things that happens. So I look forward to Comic-Con the most to see my friends, some of whom are coming in from, you know, like LA, and I might only get to see them for like 10 minutes, but that's still 10 more minutes that I would have gotten to see with them anyway. I was talking to a bunch of guys who worked with me at Wizard, and they were all kind of younger, and they hadn't been there. They weren't there as long as I was, but they were still there during like what many consider to be the worst part, or at least the tail end of the worst part. I came in kind of when things were still good, but then started going downhill and people started getting fired every week and that kind of thing. But the thing that a lot of us have said to each other is that, like, hyperbolic as it may be, Wizard was like our NAM. Obviously, we weren't getting shot at or anything like that, but any, like, experience that you go through with somebody that is bad on whatever level it's bad at, in your mind or in reality, the people that you go through that with are like your brothers and sisters. There's a connection there, even if you maybe didn't like them very much or you didn't even overlap at all, there was still negative elements that you all had to deal with, and that kind of bonds you. So every time I go to New York Comic Con, it's exciting because I get to see some of those people that I don't see much. I get to kind of just hang out and be an adult. I don't have to worry about kids stuff. And I don't have to change any diapers. And I got to sleep in a bed all by myself. So it was pretty good. But at the same time, getting on the train Thursday night was pretty difficult because I had to leave and Lucy wasn't really understanding. I mean, all week I'd been telling her, Daddy's got to go down to work. He's got to go away for a while. He's going to get on the train and go down to the city, and then he'll be back on Sunday and he'll see you again. And you get to go to school on Friday and you get to hang out with Mommy all weekend. And, you know, we'd been talking it up, like, you know, they were going to have a really good time, and they did, but I think she still didn't really understand it. So leaving was hard. At the show, you're pretty busy, so you're kind of just focused on whatever you have to deal with. At least that's how I work. I can compartmentalize pretty well. But then every time I'd be, like, walking the floor or walking to a panel or whatever, and I'd see, like, a little kid with his parents, or if I heard a little kid that sounded like Lucy, it would immediately be like, oh, I miss that kid so much. And Sunday was kids' day. I really wanted to get out of there, so it took a little while because I had a couple panels to do, but I was very excited to get back, and I was happy to see her, and I just kind of sat outside with her as she ran around and you know, finished putting dinner in the oven or whatever, and it was fun. I mean, there's still been little bits where she's been kind of crazy or asking for things all the time today, but at the same time, you know, we hung out on the couch a lot today. We kind of cuddled. I'm taking it easy today. I did my morning work, and then I might do some more stuff tonight, but mostly just kind of take it easy because it's pretty tiring. But to get into con a little bit more, I've actually been going to the New York Comic Con every year that it's existed. First three or four years, I went with Wizard, and I got laid off, and I went down 1 year just on my own. And I didn't stay very long. I kind of hung out with some people that I knew, and then I left, and I didn't bother going back because these big conventions really aren't my scene. They're not really comic book conventions. They're pop culture conventions. It's in a place called the Jacob Javits Center, which is a gigantic convention center, and it pretty much takes over the whole thing. There's one main floor that's huge, like 2 football fields or whatever. I don't know, something gigantic. And that's all, like, one half of that is companies setting up booths, not even really trying to sell anything, but they're just, like, advertising something. And they're also the big comic book companies are around there. So they'll have tables and people can come around and get things signed at specific times or check out, like, a video game or look at new toy releases, all these kinds of things. That's basically what that part is. And then the other part is all, like, merchandise sales, all that, you know, comics, toys, anime stuff that I don't understand, all over the place. That part is not nearly as crowded as the other part because what I've discovered and what I forget almost every time is that there's, like, a much different kind of comic book fan than me. And I've known this for a while, that I'm not necessarily typical, but there is a type of comic fan or pop culture fan or whatever that just loves coming to these things, loves being in the same room as other people that love the same things they do. And maybe they don't actually stay as informed as I do, but I only do because I have friends who work at these companies and I cover various comic book stuff for various websites. So I'm up on what's going on. And I also understand, like, how a business works, which I think a lot of fans kind of don't. And that is something that comes out every single time you have to go to a panel for Marvel or DC and there's a question and answer period. All respect to people who like those things, they're a nightmare because these people ask silly, awful questions that can't possibly be answered in a giant room filled with people with phones and recording devices and cameras. You know, like, how come such and such died, or why can't you bring this person back? You're either not dealing with somebody who could actually have that power to do something at those companies, or they're just not going to tell you because there's a plan for it, or they just don't want to. Like, these questions drive me nuts, and it just keeps reminding me of how, like, little people stay up on top of things, and that became most evident when I was doing a toy company panel, and I'm kind of watching, and I'm taking notes. And maybe 3/4 of the things that they showed were old, and I had covered them in my toy column. But, like, these people were oohing and on, like they'd never seen this stuff before. And but also, at the beginning, they all said they were big fans. So I don't know where the split is or how that works, because a lot of it's on their Facebook page, and it's just out there, and yet people kind of don't pay attention. There's definitely a gap there, and I'm not saying I'm any better or they're any worse. That's just there. But, like, since I already know so much stuff, and again, not bragging, half of the stuff I wish I didn't know. It just kind of puts you at different places as far as, like, how you absorb this medium, and that can be weird. But even having said all that, I think I had the most fun this year working for CBR than I've ever had at any other show. I don't really remember the different ones that I worked for Wizard very well. Like, they're all kind of a glom together ball. Oh, and I said that I worked for Wizard for 3 years, I came by myself 1 year, and then I went the last 3 years for CBR. And they really know how to do it, man. They've got a skybox up kind of above everything. I've got a bunch of photos that I took from there of just, like, the teeming masses of people all wandering around in costumes and whatnot. But you can go up there, you can type up your stories. They've got good internet. In fact, this year was the best internet, and that's another reason why it works so well. I had great internet there that almost never broke, and I also had really good phone reception even when I was in the lower levels, which is where all the panels are. Panels are basically a group of people talking to a gigantic audience of people about whatever. So this was a really good one. CBR knows how to do it. They have food come in every day, which is something that didn't even happen when I was a Wizard, and they had their own booth. So, you know, we had Subway waiting for us if we got up there around noonish, and it was just there all day. And there was soda and, you know, peanuts so you could get your protein up. And I mean, it's just a great setup, and it's fun, and those guys are really cool. I mean, I always feel, like, a little intimidated because they work other shows together. San Diego is the big one, although New York is getting up there with numbers, but San Diego is the one that this team has been doing together for what seems like a really long time. So, and I'm kind of the new guy coming into that. I still feel like that, even though there's newer reporters. But I meet a lot of cool people. I get to see a lot of cool people. And I feel a little bad because I'm so tight with the Wizard guys, but, like, Saturday, a bunch of the CBR guys and a bunch of the Wizard people, former Wizard people, all kind of went out to dinner. We couldn't sit at the same table, but, you know, you kind of talk back and forth and hang out. So that was cool. Plus, I'm just kind of, like, a nervous person and shy. And when I feel like other people, like, have all these connections and inside jokes and stuff, I kind of, like, really fall back and maybe don't say anything or get nervous and, like, overtalk, which is something I try not to do just because it makes you sound like a crazy person. But the other nice thing about this year's show was that instead of having 3 panels a day to cover, I had 2, which meant that I could go to my panel, record the thing, take my notes, come back. If I needed to go to the recording, I could. But I could also just build my story off my notes because I'm pretty good at just pulling out quotes that make sense and all that kind of stuff, as they're said. And then finish it and send it to them and be done with it. Last year, I think with having 3 Friday and Saturday, I was just constantly, like, trying to do, like, half a thing, and it took me a while to catch up. Now, I wound up not charging my battery after the show on Saturday, so I got in on Sunday, and I only had 35%, and I couldn't charge it up. I couldn't plug it in before, or, like, in the panel room, just because it wasn't set up that way anywhere. So it wound up dying in the middle of it. That was a bummer. But I still had my pocket recorder, and I used that, and so I still got to do those, but I'll work on them either tonight or tomorrow and get them in. My panels also were a little bit, not dull, because they were all, like, creator-owned panels, and I love hearing creator-owned companies and creators talk about what they're doing, because to me, that's really what's exciting about comic books right now. Marvel and DC are each putting out, you know, 50, 60 titles a month, and the problem with that is that, for me, is that they're not trying to hit home runs with every single one. And sometimes the creators just put on a book and they just kind of do it for the paycheck or because they want to, you know, stay in the good graces of the company or whatever. And so, you know, you get some books that just don't make any sense, or like ones that editorial thinks need to be in there but don't, and maybe there's not like a solid pitch behind it. But when you are dealing with creator-owned stuff, you know that at least a few people in the process thought that this was a good enough product to move forward with. Because with a lot of these things, the writer and the artist have to shoulder the financial burden in advance. You've got to basically, if you're a writer and you have an idea, and if you don't have like a friend that's an artist, or if you can't draw yourself, then you've got to pay an artist to draw your book. And you usually have to do that on your own. It's not like they give you money to do that in advance. That's why a lot of comics are doing Kickstarter right now. Because if you've got a reputation, you've got some fans, and you can set up some cool incentives, then you raise the money in advance, you've got a budget, you stick to it, you get it done, and then you can go to a company like Image and say, look, we have this book, can we do it through you? And then like then it starts making money. So it's kind of a complicated thing. That's another thing that I don't think a lot of people understand. But there's a passion there that says, I want to make this book. And the other neat thing about creator-owned is that it doesn't just stick to superheroes. People think comic books equal superheroes, but they don't. That doesn't even make any sense when you think about it. That would be like saying TV is only for sitcoms. The medium does not dictate the genre. But comic books is a genre that allowed itself, pardon me, comic books is a medium that allowed itself to be associated with the genre, did not push any limits for a long enough time that it just kind of died out, that any interest in other genres died out or just weren't even being offered to people. In like this, I'm going to get my decades wrong, but at a certain point, superheroes were like not popular at all. Maybe late 50s, early 60s, and like Westerns, romance comics, horror comics, those were the big selling books. And now, you know, from like the 70s to the 2000s or maybe 90s, if you want to be generous, it's just all been superheroes since then. And with a few exceptions, the big companies didn't even try to expand their market. Guys, I'm sorry, I'm getting really deep into comic book talk here. There's a lot of problems with this industry. But the great thing about this industry is that there's companies like Image and Dark Horse and IDW and Boom and Arkea and a million that I'm missing. All the like quote-unquote small publisher guys. First, Second, Top Shelf. I'm forgetting some and I feel bad. But these companies are and have been for a long time. Oni, if I didn't say Oni. They've been putting out books that are more personal, are creator-owned, and cover all kinds of different areas of creativity, and that's fantastic. That's what got me excited. I've been kind of down on comics, actually, going into the show, and for maybe the first time ever, I left thinking, like, wow, there's some really cool stuff out there, and it made me want to get back into some of the things, kind of catch back up, because for a while, I wasn't really reading anything. And so now, I'm kind of excited about that. So, like I said, the show went really well. I also got some good deals on books. I didn't get any sketches. I used to get sketches a lot. It's been a long time. But again, like I said, I'm like nervous and weird. And so, like, going up to somebody anymore and talking to them makes me uncomfortable if I don't know them. And even, like, people that I've been in contact with through CBR, like, I kind of assume everybody doesn't remember me. But, I mean, in reality, a lot of the people that I've talked to in the past, because I was the Image contact for like 2 years. A lot of the people I've talked to in that time period have kind of gone on, and I don't want to say that they like owe any part of their career to me. That would be insane. But I definitely wrote stories about their books before they came out and at least told people they were kind of coming up. Somebody else would have done it. I'm not saying I'm unique in this situation, but talking to so many kind of up-and-coming guys was a lot of fun. I should really just get over my fears and go talk to them and say hi. But the other thing is that, so I talked about the show floor. I talked about where the panels are. Those are all kind of underground in big dark rooms. Artist Alley was in what looked like an airplane hangar that was like a whole other part of the Javits Center. And it was actually nice because it's all big, you know, 30-foot tall ceilings or whatever, 3 stories tall. It's all white in there. There's windows way up at the top, so it actually like looks bright. And you could just go there and spend your entire day. And I think, you know, people probably do. I think they probably go there early and then go to the other places. But as far as I'm concerned, like, as a fan, like, as a comic book fan, I'm not into panels because I would rather just look online and see what happened. I mean, for me, there's no benefit to being in a room. I don't need to see a trailer for a movie 3 or 4 months in advance. I can just wait. I'm just not that obsessive about a lot of my entertainment. I just kind of take it in when I can. Plus, with movies, man, I'm not going to see them until they're on DVD. So there's no need in making that process, that wait, even longer. But again, like, I get it if that's your thing. I also despise waiting in line. And one of my still biggest complaints about New York Comic Con is that there is no press entrance or access. I mean, there are press passes, but I don't really know what they do, aside from letting you get in the building a little bit earlier, because you can't go up to somebody and be like, hey, I got a press pass. There's no, like, reserved seats for press, and literally my job, not depends, but at least some of the money I make depends on me getting into these panels. And one that I went to Sunday morning, I was really surprised. There was a line when I got there, like, 20 minutes early, and they do these, like, corral things. So I'm waiting in line. It became very clear to me after hearing people around me talk that they were actually there for the next panel. There was a big Hobbit panel after this. And, I mean, I could not imagine waiting in line for a half hour. That already right there bothered me. But if I'm getting paid to do it, that's fine. Waiting in line for an hour, or for a half hour, to sit through an hour-long panel, to then sit through another hour-long panel, and then probably run out to some other line and do that, like, it's insane to me. And frankly, I think the con was run pretty well, actually, like, the way they did lines and stuff. But for the most part, I think it's ridiculous how they make these panels such a pain. They should do tickets or something along those lines that you can reserve or just go get. I mean, I don't know the exact thing, but there was a great article about San Diego before it happened that I might be able to dig a link up for. I think it was on Hollywood Reporter. And the guy was suggesting that it should be run more like a Disneyland or a Disney World. Like, you could get a fast pass for your panel or, like, any such things. Like, every room, as far as I'm concerned, every room should be cleared out afterwards so you don't have these panel sitters. Because, I mean, I'm not talking about fairness. I guess I am talking about fairness a little bit, which is something a word I don't even want to teach my kid because I think it's not worth it and it can lead to entitlement. But we're all there to experience something that we're passionate about. It stinks if you're getting there in advance and you take somebody's spot who might actually want to go to panel A when you're really waiting for panel B. And I think it should just be easier to organize all this stuff because you've got people running around and being crazy. That's just me. Everything else I thought was actually pretty well done. Although they had like a security guy who didn't really check bags, except for Sunday when I brought my clothes back from the hotel. He checked my bag. I'm like, it's just clothes. So he's putting his hand through my dirty underwear and shirts, and I sweat a lot, so that bag was pretty gross. And he's like, you don't got anything in here, right? And then he like reached underneath. He's like, whoa, what's this? And it was a power strip. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I was like, oh, it's probably the power strip. And then he kind of like, I don't even know if he pulled it out all the way, but he was like, okay, and let me go through. It's like, what is the point of this? Like, you're not... Are you trying to create, like, the false sense of security? Because it's not working. Nobody thought this was really going to do anything. And then the other thing that does sound Disney World-esque is that you had to go and get your badge scanned. It had an RFID chip or whatever built into it. So every time you went up in or out of the, like, the main grounds of the place, you had to get your things scanned. Which coming in wasn't that big of a deal. And they just had like what looked like little tablets that could read it right away or whatever. But leaving, you had to do it. And it was like somebody, one of my friends when we were leaving Friday was like, it was like towards the end of Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds where like people are trying to get through these gates and like they're shutting and like you don't know if your friend or family's going to make it through and all this stuff. It was just a monstrous mess. Because the other thing about where Javits is located, on one side is nothing. It's like one more avenue and then the river. And then on the other side, it's like a, 11th Avenue? So it's like a busy street. So everybody piles out and then just kind of disperses to either side. and it can be kind of a mess. But whatever, not that big of a deal. It just seemed weird. I guess they were going for counterfeit badges or something. I don't really know what the point was. And even if that was the case, why are you scanning me out? Because if I'm going to go out and just hand my badge to somebody else and they're going to come in, it's not, you're not going to know. It doesn't have like a DNA chip in it or whatever. I don't think a DNA chip is a thing, you guys, but I know I keep getting heated about things, but like I said, I actually had a really good time. I met up with the CBR crew Thursday when I got in and sat with them while they had dinner. I had already eaten with Em and Lucy before I came down, so we just kind of hung out, and then my roommate Steve and I talked for a while that night. Friday, met up with a bunch of people from Wizard at a place called Duke's that was kind of a walk away, but one of the best decisions I made was to just leave my laptop bag and camera and everything in the skybox because it gets locked up and everything. And so then I didn't have to lug it around, which I thought was pretty brilliant. And because it didn't get stolen, it's super brilliant. and then Saturday, a bunch of us went to a place that was only a few blocks away. That's where CBR guys and Wizard guys came. And then we were going to leave, and I was actually going to do an episode of one of my favorite podcasts, Matt and Brad Love Comics. He's a guy I worked with at Wizard. He's interviewed a few people that were at Wizard, and I'm a big fan of the show, and I've told him, and I talked to him about it a lot. And he's like, I brought my recorder. We can go do it. And then, like, some more people came in, and I had a few more drinks, and then, like, somehow it became, like, 1:30, and I was like, oh, I guess this is not going to happen tonight. So, like I said, that didn't happen, but still, it's really fun seeing everybody and just kind of hanging out. And, you know, the beauty of being where we were is that, you know, you could get a little more buzzed or tipsy than you would normally, and it's only, I think it was like 10 blocks to get back, short blocks to get back to the hotel. And I tweeted this out, but there's really something kind of beautiful about like walking through New York City really late at night with kind of a buzz going. Not too bad, of course, that would be not fun, but it's an awesome place to be. And I always like walking around there when I can. I walked almost everywhere, including from the center back to Grand Central to come home yesterday, which was a mistake because I went right through Times Square, although that crowd was pretty much the same as walking the New York Comic Con floor crowd, so I was a little prepared, but I really wanted to make an earlier train, but I didn't, so I just kind of hung out, and I made it, no big deal. I started reading The Shining again, and that kind of comes back around to fatherhood, because the first time I read it, I was either in like 8th grade or high school, and I don't remember a lot about that reading experience, but I remember liking it. And then I gave it to a friend who I worked with, or a guy that I worked with at the bagel place. He got fired, and I never saw it again. So I got it on Kindle. I decided not to take any books down with me to kind of lessen the load and just take my Kindle, even though I'm like halfway through another book at this point. But that book hits me in such a different way now that I'm a dad, because the guy that Jack Nicholson plays in the movie is the father of the little boy. He had a drinking problem for a long time, and he did some bad stuff. You know, he hurt his kid while he was drunk, and man, it's just one of those things that, like, now that I'm a father, like, these things make me, like, more angry and upset than they did when I was a kid. I mean, I'm sure I still reacted negatively. I did not cheer or anything when those scenes happened, but it's just one of those things where, like, now that I have a kid, and now that I've been drunk and kind of have been in that haze, it's like, oh God, you know, with a kid, you've got to control yourself so much more. And, you know, obviously he had a lot of problems, but you know, it's more of like a cautionary tale now than it was when I was younger. And I'm just kind of like really into it on a different level. And I really like that book. And I'm excited because I've never watched the Kubrick movie all the way through, but I bought it last year on DVD. And so I'm going to finish this book, I'm going to watch the movie, and then there's apparently this crazy documentary about the movie called Room 237, I think. And there's all these, like, there's a conspiracy theory, if I'm repeating what I heard correctly. Basically, the theory is that idea that the moon landing was just filmed, you know, apparently, according to this, Stanley Kubrick did it. He was the one that filmed it and made it look so real. And he hid in like an apology or a confession in The Shining to let everybody in the world know what he did. I know there's other theories about the movie. I don't know if the documentary covers just one or all of them, but I've heard it's pretty bonkers, like, the depths that they go to, like, really dig through that movie. So I'm kind of excited to kind of get in on that, watch the movie with fresh eyes. I mean, I've seen most of it, just not all together, you know what I mean? So that's kind of interesting. I mean, it's Halloween time. With Comic-Con, I completely forgot about all that stuff, to be completely honest. But I came back, I watched a movie I liked last night called The Frighteners that has a lot of problems. If you want to read my review, it's over on unitedmonkey.com. That's M-O-N-K-E-E.com. And I'm kind of back into it. I'm reading this other book called Mike Carey's Vicious Circle, but I really want to keep reading The Shining now, and hopefully I can burn through The Shining, finish this one, finish another one, and I can do all right on my Halloween reading list. But like I said before, I don't even know if I'll get halfway through that by the 31st, and considering it's the 14th when I'm recording this and the 15th when this goes up, I don't know, man. One more thing about the convention. There's a thing that happens to pretty much everybody. We call it con crud. And last night it hit me hard. Basically, the idea is that after being in a room with, you know, 150,000 people, all those different kinds of germs and whatever running up against each other, and then working really hard for a long time, going out, partying, drinking, hanging out with your friends, staying up late, getting up early, doing it again. Basically, when you're all done with that, your body just kind of kicks you in the butt and you get like a cold slash flu type thing. And it started hitting me last night, and I was like, oh no, I don't want to be sick. I was just sick like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I don't want to have to do this again. But it is gone. My voice is still a little hoarse, but that's from talking so much and so loudly on Saturday. And honestly, I'm just kind of glad to be back. I had a good time. I got my rest in. I got to sleep in a double or queen whatever size bed and stretch out as much as I wanted to. And I got to kind of just regroup in a different way than, you know, I get to other times. And so I'm excited to, you know, be back. Lucy and I are going to music class again tomorrow, although it will have already happened by the time you hear this. And it's just, you know, like I said, sometimes you need to get away for a little bit and come back and be rejuvenated and kind of get back to it. And so that's kind of where I'm at right now. I really didn't have time to watch anything, so I'm probably just going to skip Pop Papa of the Week. And I don't remember anything that happened before Thursday anyway. And as far as Pop Papa Seal of Approval goes, oh, I was going to skip that too, but I keep forgetting to talk about this one thing that Lucy loves like crazy. I can't find it in the room right now, but I'll put as many details as I can find on the show notes. And it is a Cinderella crown. Now, if you don't have a kid that likes Cinderella crowns or princess crowns, then this won't really matter to you. But Lucy's had three now. I think Em's mom picked it up for her somewhere. And so, you know, these crowns are usually just like basically like a headband and then the thing comes up. The problem with most of them that I've found is that they're super cheap and break really easily. And if your living room is kind of like ours, which is just slowly getting taken over by toys, you're definitely going to step or kick them and something's going to happen and you're going to have an upset kid. The beauty of this one, this Disney one, is that the band itself seems tougher. It's wrapped in fabric and it's got those little, guys, I don't know what this stuff is called, but the little things that look like combs. So it actually goes into your hair and it stays better. So that's one reason it's better than a lot of these other crowns that I've seen. And the other part that really makes it good is that, like, the pointy part of the crown that goes up is bendy. So, like, instead of it all being hard plastic, that whole part has, like, a lot of give to it. And that thing's been through the ringer because she loves wearing it. She wore it to the grocery store when we went out today. And she just gets a huge kick out of it. And everybody loves seeing her in it. I had to get used to the idea of going outside with a kid wearing a crown, to be honest. But she loves it. I don't really care. So what's the difference? And like I said, this one can take a beating and not get broken. I mean, I wouldn't step on it purposefully or anything, but it's been in like crates and baskets and bags and various car rides and up and down the stairs and all around, and it's still kicking. And so for that, the Cinderella Disney Princess Crown, which I will more fully and accurately name in the show notes, gets the Pop Papa seal of approval. All right, gang. Sorry if this one got a little too inside baseball in the comic book industry or convention scene. That's just kind of what I was going through and thinking about, and that's where I was at. So I hope you guys have a good week. If you want to check out the show notes for this episode, head on over to poppapa.com. That's poppapa.com. If you want to check out my pop culture blog, which talks about movies, it's a lot of horror movie stuff right now, I will admit, comic books and music and anything like that, that's at unitedmonkey.com. I also have really been trying to get back into my cooking blog about all the different recipes I make and food we have when we go out. That's called monkeyingaroundthekitchen.com. And I am on Twitter at Papa Deitch. That's PoppaDeitsch. And again, all those links, as well as links to my work on CBR, are in the show notes back on poppapa.com. So with that, I'm going to leave you guys, and I hope you have a good week.